Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive myths which are associated with religion, all of them, politics, patriotism, the media, as well as with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is actually occurring while depicting how these events will shape our world. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number is toll-free for anyone who would like to question or just participate in the discussion. Is 877-300-7645. The first story is of Syrian forces trying to engage Israel in the civil war that is taking place within its country so as to generate Islamic support for the Assad government. Israeli and Syrian forces have exchanged fire along the ceasefire line in what is called occupied Golan Heights. Golan Heights ought not be called occupied. There is no way anyone in Israel in their right mind would ever give it up. When it was controlled by the Syrians, they used it daily to lob artillery shells down on the Sea of Galilee area, just creating a reign of fear among Israelis. It's the high ground and the watershed above the Sea of Galilee, one of the most prolific agricultural areas in Israel. And so to give it back to the Syrians would be to say, here, take the high ground, put your artillery back there, and why don't you just continue to fire at us, and, you know, we'll help you. We'll load the cannons if that'll be of assistance. Israel returned fire after one of its vehicles was hit by shots from Syria, the Israeli forces say. Now, if you listen to the statement from the Syrian army, what you'll recognize is that the whole thing is just a charade, although the bullets were real, for the express purpose of making it look like Assad was on the side of the Muslims against Israel, and therefore Muslims shouldn't be rallying to his demise. A statement from the Syrian army said that it had destroyed an Israeli vehicle with everything it had in it. Well, then if it was driving, which they claim, because they claim it had encroached upon their territory, then the driver and the occupants of the vehicle would have been dead. The fact is that did not occur. But to kill a Jew would have been a golden attaboy for Assad, and the propaganda is therefore written in such a way that it gives the inference that the Syrian army is on the side of Muslims. The statement said that the vehicle was shot after it crossed the ceasefire line and headed towards the rebel-held village of Bir Ajam. What Assad is trying to do is to convince the Muslims of the world in the propaganda war here that Israel is aiding and abetting the rebels against Assad. Now, while Israel has no love for Assad, he's one of the most ruthless, despicable anti-Israeli dictators in the world. He has declared war against Israel twice, the last on Yom Kippur, and did so in heinous fashion. It'd be hard to find a leader in the world that Israel would despise more based upon his behavior than Bashar al-Assad. But Israel also knows that the rebels who are in opposition to him, the Sunni rebels, are all fundamentalists. They are Salaf Muslims. And as a result, should they be empowered, the relationships with Syria will deteriorate. It's what America couldn't figure out in its invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. That yes, the dictator may be bad, but if you intervene, the group that will replace that dictator in power could be, and in this case, would absolutely be worse. But if Assad can convince the Islamic world that Israel is on the side of the rebels, that would mean that the rebels are on the wrong side. And then if he can show himself as shooting and killing Israelis, then he's on the right side. The fact that none of this is true, doesn't enter into the equation when you're dealing with Muslims. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has previously accused Israel of aiding the rebels and has not provided substantive evidence. Of course, there is no evidence, and there's no reason for evidence in the Islamic world. Syrian gunfire hit the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights in two previous incidents this week without causing injury. And their motivations were clear. Their aim was not. Tensions between Israel and Syria have soared this year, with Israel allegedly carrying out three airstrikes on Syria to stop the transfer of advanced weapons to the militant Islamist movement Hezbollah. Israel has occupied the Golan Heights, this article says, since the 1967 war. It annexed the territory in 1981 in a move that has not been recognized by the international community. Interesting that there is a recognition procedure in the international community, and if you declare war on a country and you assault it and you lose and that country takes part of your territory as a buffer, that's not recognized by the international community. But any other claim to land, which is typically claimed by the aggressor, is recognized. Hypocrites, all of them. Speaking of hypocrites, I have two stories here on the same really perspective. And this may not sound like a big deal to most listeners around the world, but this particular story is the cause célèbre in the pro-Palestinian movement. If you're one of those who is prone, and you're probably not listening to this program, but if you are one of those who is prone to say that the Israelis are bad, the Palestinians are good, the Palestinians are a real legitimate people, they're deserving of their own homeland, the Jews expelled them from their homeland, the Jews are occupying their land, the Jews are aggressive and terrible with the Palestinians, and that the Palestinians have a right to their own homeland, and that the Palestinians are not terrorists, and when given their own country, there will be peace in the Middle East. If you're one of those, then probably not listening to this program, you're not even sane. But in the cause célèbre for a Palestinian state during the Intifada of 2000, where Yasser Arafat ordered Muslims in Israel to attack and kill Jews, there was a little boy who was allegedly killed in the crossfire, and the images, because they are so vivid, of the fear on the father and son's faces as they are caught between the crossfire. This was a skirmish that was caused by Muslim militants using automatic weapons and attacking the Israelites, and then the IDF responding to them. There was a crossfire, and there's a film of the father and son being in between the two elements of the crossfire, which is now caused strictly because the mythical people known as the Palestinians, these Muslims who aren't mythical, took up weapons and began to fire, and the Israelis tried to put down the violence. So here's the story. An Israeli investigation has said a French news report in 2000, which blamed Israeli troops for shooting dead a Palestinian child, was absolutely baseless. It said the raw footage of the incident provided no evidence whatsoever that Israeli bullets killed the 12-year-old Mohammed al-Dura, as France 2's report claimed. Scenes of the child being shot in Gaza became one of the most enduring images of the second Palestinian uprising, the second Intifada. Now, just the context of this, where the so-called mythical people known as the Palestinians were engaged in the midst of an uprising, which they used terror as their primary tactic. And so if there was someone killed, it was killed because Yasser Arafat ordered Muslims to terrorize Jews, and Jews were thereby defending themselves. But context is something most people don't care about these days. The footage has been the subject of dispute for many years. Now, the reason that this particular incident is so important is that this image is probably the single most iconic image unifying hatred of Jews in Israel by Muslims and by their sympathizers. It's always this child, their picture, the dastardly Jews killing this little boy, shooting him to death on purpose. Postage stamps, billboards, television shows, all on Muhammad al-Dura being killed by those dastardly Jews. Well, France, too, has stood by the report and sued a French media activist, Philippe Carinti, for defamation after he said the film was bogus. A French appeals court will rule on that case this week. The television report showed Muhammad al-Dura, shielded by his father, Jamal, as the pair were apparently caught in a crossfire between Israeli troops and Palestinian gunmen in September of 2000. Jamal survived the incidents, but France 2 film showed what appeared to be the boy's lifeless body at the end of the report, which was aired around the world. Israel initially apologized for the shooting. Well, who knows why they did that, but nonetheless they did. Soon thereafter, Israel raised doubts about France 2's version of events, saying that he could just as easily have been shot by the Palestinians. Israel was widely blamed by the Palestinians and internationally for the death. The image of the child became a symbol of opposition to Israeli military occupation. The investigation ordered by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu last September concludes that France 2's claims that Israeli soldiers shot Muhammad al-Dura are untrue, and that there was no proof whatsoever that he and his father were even harmed, much less killed, by Israelis. Quote, contrary to the report's claim that the boy is killed, the committee's review of the raw footage showed that in the final scenes, which were not broadcast by France 2, the boy is seen to be alive. The report called on France 2 to publicly correct and clarify its narrative as the first step towards moderating the TV report's destructive effects. Something that happens all the time in the media. They only want you to know what they want you to know. We'll return in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Deanna. You can join in this conversation by calling 877-300-7645. This is an interesting follow-up statement from France 2 yesterday. They said, following the publication of the Israeli report, which was a September, October, November, December, so 4 months of last year and 5 months of this year, 9 months, let's take a month off for because they may not have started at the beginning and it's not the end of the month. So an eight-month investigation conducted by one of the most public and disciplined investigative nations in the world, Israel. And France says after that, the French too says, it has shown a willingness to participate in any official independent investigation carried out according to international standards. Let's see, France too. If that were the case and you're a journalistic organization, why didn't you do that when you told your story? Why didn't you carry out an independent investigation according to international standards as a journalistic media outlet when you aired your story? Or was purposefully editing the film to create the story you wanted to present because it fit with your political agenda more important than the truth? France. Here's the second story. The head of the Israeli government's review committee, Yoshi Kipper-Washer, said that he does not know what happened to Muhammad al-Dura. Showing the raw material provided by France 2 to CNN, he said, see, he was supposed to be dead. He was declared dead a moment ago by the narrator. Understand that he was declared dead when he was laying there by the narrator. That's where France 2 cut the film. He said the boy is dead. But a second later, Mohammed Al-Dura raises his hand. Israel places the implications of the Mohammed Al-Dura story in a much wider context. Yes, context is everything. If you want to know the truth, context is everything. For example, if he actually was killed, which it doesn't appear he was because you don't raise your hand when you're dead, then he was killed because Yasser Arafat ordered Muslims to rise up in terrorist assaults against Jews, and Jews naturally defended themselves. And if he was caught in the crossfire of that, then Yasser Arafat is to blame for his death. Context. Context. The only reason that Muslims in Israel feel like their land was taken from them is because the Arab League ordered Muslims who were living in Israel to flee so that their armies could wipe the arriving Jews out more readily. Context. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said, "It is important to focus on the incident which has slandered Israel's reputation." That was the purpose of the propaganda piece by France. This is a manifestation of the ongoing mendacious campaign to delegitimize Israel. And by the way, the propaganda is working. People are unwilling to view anything in context, and so the propaganda prevails. Netanyahu said, "There is only one way to counter lies, and that is through the truth. Only the truth can prevail over lies." Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu, if you could only be true to your name, I would be your staunchest supporter. His name means the gift of Yahweh. Yahweh gives. But his statement is absolutely true. I am constantly asked, because of the popularity of the books, Prophet of Doom, Tea with Terrorists, and also because of the fact that there is a growing group around the world who've come to recognize recently that Paul is a false prophet, and therefore questioning Paul. Some even coming to rally behind Yada Yah and An Introduction to God, who are, who encourage reaching out to people by using half-truths, by approaching them in a softer, more Gentile way, by appearing to be one of them and kind of luring them in and then gradually unfolding the truth. It's not the way you prevail. Benjamin Netanyahu is right. Only the truth can destroy lies, not bullets. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Benjamin Netanyahu said, "Only the truth can prevail over lies." What is the most pervasive lie in our world today? Well, it'd be a tough answer to that question because...
Religion.
Yeah, I want to say religion, Scott. That's my first instinct. But, you know, we were talking over the break. Politics is nothing but a pile of lies.
It's another form of religion, though.
Yeah, think about, and we were talking, this again, over the break about, yeah, great, it is a form of religion. And when we're talking about this particular story about the French media outlet purposefully creating a story that fit with their politics, and the facts didn't fit the story, so they edited the film to create the impression that would serve their political interest, and they did so with a religious zeal. And when we look at the media today, look at what happened related to the investigation of Benghazi. The President of the United States was found guilty in every possible way. He told the military to stand down when it should have stood up to protect our ambassador. When the President came out and he lied about the reasons behind the killings, we found that, in fact, his justification for doing so, which he blamed the CIA for faulty initial reports, that that wasn't correct, that it was his administration that edited 12 times the reports to create the illusion that they wanted. When that was discovered, if the media wasn't in religious zeal looking at Obama as their God, the man would be running for his political life at the moment. Same thing is true with the incident with the AP, his administration ordering the wiretaps. The story has just gone away. Why? Because the media, to a large part, is a political institution with a religious zeal for its politics. It's just the nature of things. We have zealots promoting their agenda as opposed to an informed moral view of things. And you look how bad the media is. Look, just as again, we were talking again during the break. Look at the incidences related to this tornado. No one seems to be able to put this tornado in context of what's happening. That's how we began the program yesterday. The last 3 years have been absolutely devastating. You know, the worst series of tornadoes in American history a couple of years ago, a devastating and early attack of tornadoes last year, and what is probably the most massive tornado in recorded history just a couple of days ago. They couldn't get the numbers right. They had 91 people being dead when the number is in the low 20s. I mean, that happens in a third world country. It ought not happen in America. They even had the scale of the storm wrong. It wasn't a 4, it was a 5. I mean, what in the world is wrong with us? We have all of these huge news apparati, have all of this enormous technology, and we can't get the facts right. And when the facts are finally presented, as they were in the case of the AP, in the case of the tax story out of Cincinnati with the IRS and the political activist groups, and then again with Benghazi, we get the facts right, and no one can make a moral conclusion. Can't view anything in context. And so here's a president in the worst week of his political career, is saved by a tornado. And, of course, errant reporting on it at that. This, concluding the story on Mohammed Al-Dura's story, it says that the story has become an important symbol in the Palestinian struggle for statehood, as in, again, let's just lie, media. There is no such thing as a Palestinian, and you know it. There's no place called a Palestinian state, never has been. The image of his final moments is shown on stamps in Egypt, Tunisia, Iraq, Iran, and Morocco. He's a cause celeb in the Islamic world. And even here, the media says, the image of his final moments. The film shows he didn't die. And yet the image of his final moments is how they conclude the piece. The journalist is incapable of reading his own report or her own report. Israel says that the false narrative of Al-Dura's death has been used to justify terrorist attacks against Israel and worldwide anti-Semitism, which was the purpose, and it prevailed. It worked. The person who sent me that story also attached a question to that story, and they said, whatever happened to Yasser Arafat's post-mortem? You know, where Yasser Arafat, back in November, late November last year, he was dug up, and they had this great military procession with his body and military guards, and he was reburied again with military pomp and ceremony. And that it was claimed because there was no autopsy done of his death in France. He was taken to France. He died of AIDS. He was a homosexual. There was no autopsy done because it would have been embarrassing to Yasser Arafat's great legacy as the superlative terrorist, I suppose, to have died because the ugly one was a homosexual having unprotected sex and got AIDS. But evidently in some of his clothing there was traces of radioactivity. Plutonium-210 was the ingredient, and his widow, who, by the way, lives off the billions of dollars that Yasser Arafat skimmed from the charity of nations like the United States and those throughout Europe. He was a thief on top of everything else. She says, oh, it must have been poisoned. So they exhumed his body. November 27th, put it back in the ground a day after, and there's not been a single report as to what they found. Nothing. The story here from media on the day that it was exhumed, media experts, our medical experts from three different countries exhumed the body of Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat. Guess why they couldn't send one from the quote-unquote Palestinians? Because there's no medical school in the West Bank of Ramallah to determine if his death 8 years ago was caused by poisoning. The complicated procedures occurred behind a curtain of blue tarps that the Palestinian officials had hung around Arafat's mausoleum in recent days. The Palestinians in Jordan had gathered to catch a glimpse of the forensic process, which they couldn't see because it was behind these tarps in the mausoleum. Most Palestinians have long believed that Israel killed Arafat in retaliation for his long campaign against the Jewish state, and specifically for the suicide bombings and other attacks on Israelis that marked the second Palestinian uprising into Fatah in the West Bank and Gaza a decade ago. So if the Israelis had killed him, would they not have been justified in doing so? If someone orders countless attacks, suicide attacks on civilians in your country, wouldn't it be appropriate to kill him? If you know for certain, and you can read his public declarations where he's calling on Muslims to go and terrorize Jews and kill them, and they're doing so on his orders, wouldn't it have been appropriate? Wouldn't it have been moral? So what if they did? Now, mind you, I don't think they did. But should they have done so, it would have been the right call. It would have been moral. The case of his death at a French hospital in 2004 was never fully determined. No autopsy was performed on his body. Actually, it was determined, just wasn't released. There were many subsequent sources of information that detailed his long history and proved conclusively that he died of AIDS. But an Al Jazeera documentary aired over the summer provided the first shreds of possible evidence. The network persuaded Arafat's widow, Shira, to submit her husband's belongings to French and Swiss forensic experts who found a high level of radioactive isotope plutonium-210. It's the same substance that was determined to have caused the death of KGB spy Alexander Litvinenko in London in 2006. So now why not blame the Russians? We've got Glenn calling in again today from Philadelphia. He called in yesterday, has another question today. Please go ahead, Glenn. Wow. I can certainly hear the static on your phone. That was a blast. Hopefully this will be a little clearer this time. Go ahead.
All right. Wow. I don't know what happened there. You can hear me now, I hope. Okay.
Yes, it's not a good connection, but we can. Glenn, we're going to have you call back, and I don't know if you're using a speakerphone or what the issue may be, but the background noise is way too overwhelming for us to air it. So if you could give us a call back, and we'll have Scott check out the connection when you do. Moving on to the next item in the news, we're finding a significant interaction between the Chinese and India these days. And the reason this is a important story is these are the two most populous countries in the world. And as we move through the last days, we're very likely to see China and India playing a major role. China, because it is the world's economic superpower these days. They are the leading manufacturer in the world. And China did something that was brilliant. And maybe, I don't even know if it's an evil sort of way, but it was brilliant. The United States has taken the approach that it wants to control the world through its military might. So the United States has invested $700 to $800 billion a year, plus the cost of the most two recent wars, which were $6 trillion all total, on top of the, say, $750 billion a year on weapons and weapon systems that kill and destroy. And that is how the United States perpetrates its influence around the world. China has taken a different approach. Its military is about one-tenth the size of the U.S. military. And it's what it's done instead is it has taken the restrictions off free enterprise and has thereby enabled its ability to manufacture goods to compete on an international basis to an extreme. It is, from a manufacturing point of view, what America is from a military point of view. One's positive. It makes things. The other is negative. It destroys things. And then China has also used the balance of payments that it received from making things to buying things, like the control of rare earth elements. More on this story. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm going to finish this story on China and India, and then we'll turn to Glenn, who appears to have a better connection. The strategy that China has deployed to become the world's superpower has been to unleash its manufacturing might, its economy, at the same time that the world is going to war against corporations. That'll be our lead story in tomorrow's news, where the rest of the world is taxing and regulating corporations to death so that they're no longer productive. China has liberated its economy. And it has also taken the money that it has received as a result of being the world's leading manufacturer and has invested that money by buying rare earth elements and the sources of those rare earth elements, which are going to be the de facto currency when all other currencies are destroyed by greedy governments outspending their resources. And you look at the United States, it's already a subject of China. We are absolutely controlled by China. If China tells us we have to jump, Americans have to jump. They own us because of our debt. We put ourselves in a position where we gave the grant deed of America to China. They played the game brilliantly, and they are on the cusp of becoming the world superpower because the United States cannot maintain its military. United States is bankrupt. It cannot maintain its military, and China has deployed a vastly superior strategy. These things known, we're going to turn to Glenn. Good morning, Glenn. I hope we have a better connection.
Yes. Good morning.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, the United States paid the corporations to move to China. Paid for their, kept them afloat while they were moving and subsidized their ramp up costs while they were setting up shop over there. So, it's crazy.
Yes, it's when you look at America with China during the George W. Bush administration, he actually perpetuated, memorialized China's most favored nation status with the United States, which gave them favorable duty rates. We don't play the game intelligently in terms of duties with our trading partners. China was an example of this, and because of the imbalance of trade now and because of the U.S. deficit, it's way too late to resolve the problem. The problem can no longer be resolved, and there isn't a company in their right mind that is going to build its manufacturing base here in the United States with all of the restrictions and costs of doing so when it is vastly more efficient to do so in China. So we have stacked the deck to the point now where the problem is irresolvable.
And while they're busy legislating what type of light bulbs we use, China is utterly destroying its environment.
They don't have any concern over their environment. We are over-regulating American companies relative to the environment to make it almost impossible to be productive in this country, and they're at the far extreme the other way. So there is a proper place to be, and neither country has found it. We're both at the far extremes of what is sensible.
Right. The original reason for my call was a bit more trivial, but it was making me squirm, so I thought I'd go. I wanted to speak at least momentarily in defense of the word religion, which is not inherently a pejorative. It means to gather across. Or it's often, people often say relink, but actually it's more the idea of gather together, to gather across.
That's not the definition of religion. I mean, it might be a modern interpretation of the word, but the word religion is...
When I looked it up in the Oxford English Dictionary,
Let me give you the history. The word religion is, as are so many English words, it's a transliteration of a Latin word. And the Latin word, the Latin word means to rebind. It's based on the Latin word for ligament, and ligaments bind our joints together, bind our bones, our skeleton together, and so the concept of religion is to rebind. It's to bind people to it and together, and so if you're looking at something that binds, which is another word for binding is oppressing, controlling, manipulating, compelling. It is that's the root of the concept. It's man's way of controlling, of binding people to them. So I look at it as a pejorative.
When you look in the dictionary, a word may have more than one denotation, and then each of those denotations may have varying connotations depending on the context in which they were used. So I suggest there's more than one denotation for the word bind or link.
That's correct. You can be bound to something that is good. You can be bound to something that is bad. And if you look at the case of religion throughout the centuries, it has been the cause of more death and more despair for humanity probably than any other institution, causing millions upon millions of deaths and great oppression. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment.